Thank you for listening to this sermon from Seven Springs Presbyterian Church. If you want to learn more about us, please find us on Facebook or visit us at sevenspringspresbyterian.com.
So as I said before, we'll be looking at 2 Samuel chapter 5. We've had a slight little break as we've looked, but previously we looked up to the first 10 verses of chapter 5. And I said that out of all the Bible, I think that these three chapters, chapter 5, chapter 6, and chapter 7, are some of the most important Bible chapters in the whole Bible. If we're going to understand the New Testament and ideas in the New Testament, even words and understandings of just certain things, even just the importance of Jerusalem. The Jerusalem becomes established as a city, as we looked at last time. We see this in verses 6 to 10. The Jerusalem is now established as a place of the capital, you might say, of Israel before it had moved from place to place. But now Jerusalem becomes the center of where things happen. And Jerusalem is then, we'll see at the end of chapter 24, Jerusalem is now where they then build the temple. But chapter 5 is important because David is finally anointed king. Right back from 1 Samuel chapter 16, where he's anointed as king and Samuel calls him king and says he is going to be prince of Israel, king over Israel. It's taken all this time for him to be able to be king, and finally it happens. And what we see in verse 10, as we looked at last time, that David became greater and greater. It says, for the Lord, the God of hosts, was with him. That God has established him as king. And chapter 5, what we're going to look at tonight, is important because if you turn over to chapter 7, one of those great pinnacles of the Old Testament, these mountaintop experiences, verse 1 explains, now when the king lived in his house, for the Lord had given him rest from his surrounding enemies. And then he goes to Nathan and says, I live in a house of cedar, but the Lord, the Ark of the Covenant, lives in a tent. We get the Ark of the Covenant will come up in chapter 6 as important. David's house will be important in chapter 5 of the building of David's house. And we see this, David's house, in verses 11 to 12. And Hiram, the king of Tyre, sent messengers to David, and cedar trees also, carpenters and masons who build David a house. And David knew that the Lord had established him king over Israel. He exalted his kingdom for the sake of his people, Israel. Now, just a brief note on this name, Hiram. Sarah's granddaddy, great-granddaddy, was twins. And they had Hiram and Byram. Hiram Elvis and Byram Alvis. Malvis as names. So if you're ever looking for twin names, Sarah's family does have twins in them. And Sarah's sister had some twins, and we said, we've got the perfect names for you, Hiram and Byram. They were known as Buck and Toot, but but Hiram here is king of Sidon. Sidon is a coastal city, and it's very important. This ally is very important in the life of David, but more importantly, when we turn to Solomon. Today, we go to get lumber or timber. We'd go to Lowe's or Barry's or to go get our supplies. Whereas here, you would go to Hiram. Hiram would be where you would go get all of your supplies, and Hiram in Sidon. And he supplied most of the materials that we find in the temple, of Solomon's temple. You think about the Solomon's temple, as Jesus said, is arrayed in all this clothes and glory. And here, this is where he gets them. And he also builds David's house, as David references in chapter 7. I live in a house of cedar. This cedar comes from Hiram. Now, King Hiram brought Tyre and Sidon, both of these cities, up and put them on the map. It's a coastal city that became a large port for exporting, one of the most important ports in all the Mediterranean. Now, some have questioned how long Hiram's reign was. A Jewish historian, Josephus, stated that Hiram ruled only 34 years, from 969 BC to 936 BC. So that would put him in the reign of Solomon, but not in the reign of David. But I think we can look and to say that a reign of 50 years is not past someone. Saul and David both ruled for 40 years each. To rule for 50 years is quite possible, especially if you think that David defeated Goliath in about 20 or something. He became king when he was 30. So to think that it's quite possible that you could reign for 50 years. So here he builds himself a house. This gift comes from Hiram. But then in verse 12, we see something very important. Leading up to all this, we see, and David knew that the Lord, had established him king over Israel, and that he exalted his kingdom for the sake of his people, Israel. Now, David had no doubt in his mind that the Lord had established him, had made him king. It was not because of his might, not because of his power. There is no doubt that David waited patiently for the Lord. He did not take things into his own hands to be able to make himself king. He was anointed king in chapter 16, and in no way did he then force himself on to the throne. You might even say that that's a little bit of that Abigail principle. If you turn back to chapter 25, when Abigail is there, the wife of Nabal at this point, and in chapter 25, Abigail gives him wisdom, and David is going to take things into his own hands to deal with Nabal. But in chapter 25, verse 28, Abigail says to David, "Please forgive the trespass of your servant, for the Lord will certainly make my Lord a sure house, because my Lord is fighting the battles for thee, Lord, and evil shall not be found in you as long as you live. If men rise up to pursue you and to seek your life, the life of my Lord shall be bound in the bundle of the living in the care of the Lord your God. And the lives of your enemies shall sling out as from the hollow of a sling. And when the Lord has done to my Lord according to all the good that he has spoken concerning you and has appointed you prince over Israel, my Lord shall have no cause of grief or pangs of conscience for having shed blood without cause, or for my Lord working salvation himself. And when the Lord has dealt with my Lord, then remember your servant." So here we see Abigail warning and saying, don't take things into your own hands. Don't go out and pursue people taking bloodshed upon your own hands. Wait for the Lord. The Lord has said he will make you king, and he will make you king. And here in chapter 5, we see that David knows this to be the case. That he knew that the Lord had established him king over Israel, that he exalted his kingdom for his people's sake. You just think about how long David had waited for this moment, what he had to go through. He did not kill Saul by his own hands. He did not take down Saul's hand, house single-handedly. He did not take down Abner, Ishbosheth, anybody else. He waited patiently for the Lord, and the Lord had established him. And we even see this in his children's names, that often here we see that God established, God exalts, God knows. And we see this carried out, that David knew that God's hand was upon him. Now, we don't know exactly the reasons why this took so long from chapter 16 now to chapter 5, where he finally is king over Israel. But I think a part of it is this growing, that as he comes and is king, that he sees that to be the case. Now, you might have had this in your own life as well, that you get to a certain point and you can say, there's no other way, but it's through God's providence that I stand here today in this position, in this ability, I remember many times that I knew that I wanted to step into full-time ministry at a young age, and I'm so glad that I did not step into full-time ministry when I thought I was ready. That God prepared me through this time that I'm by no means ready now, in the same that I think I've got it all and I know it all. But I'm so glad that the Lord made me wait patiently for this moment to happen because of what I learned along the way, to be able to trust in God, to be able to see things. And I've got a long way to go. But again, we see God's hand of patiently waiting as David is now king over Israel. And we see in this verse that David knew that God's hand was at work. God, he cannot stand there and say, I became king. He stands there and says, God made me king over Israel. The next thing we see in verses 13 to 15 is David concubines, wives, and children. In verse 13 and 15, we see, when David took more concubines and wives from Jerusalem after he had came from Hebron, and more sons and daughters were born to David. And these are the names of those who were born to him in Jerusalem: Shammua, Shubab, Nathan, Solomon, Ippah, Elishua, Nepheg, Japhia, Elishama, Eliada, and Ephilet. Here again we see this highlight, and even you see the author is highlighting what is happening here. That, and David took more concubines. He had more sons and daughters. And I think even here the order is important. He didn't take more wives and concubines. He took more concubines and wives. And then that growth of more sons and daughters. You would definitely argue that David's quiver is definitely full. But we need to remember what is warned in Deuteronomy chapter 17, written in the law, what a king should not do. And it explains what a king should be like, that a king must be from your own people, not a foreign king, but one of your own people. And one of the warnings that it gives is that a king should not acquire many wives for himself, lest his heart turn away, nor he shall acquire for himself excessive silver and gold. Now, you could have maybe argued that six wives is not many wives. Seven wives, you might be able to argue, is closer to many wives. The Bible definitely teaches that a marriage is between one man and one woman. So I think many is more than one. But here you see that David has taken more wives and more concubines. We don't even hear their names. The author doesn't even record their names. But this warning that happens in Deuteronomy 17:17 should have been written down by David as he became king. We saw this with Saul, with Solomon. Again, Samuel is a great example of someone who upholds the law, follows the law. And what Samuel told the people and the rights and the duties of the kingship. He turned to Deuteronomy 17 and read out what a king should do. And he wrote them in a book and laid them up before the Lord. This is what a king was meant to do. To write out the law by his own hand. That he is a king, but he's underneath the king of the Lord. And Samuel sent all the people away, each to his own tree. So we see the growing of David's house. We'd have seven children so far. And now we, again, don't have any record of the wives or the concubines of who bore these children. We do get an idea of it in 1 Chronicles chapter 3, verse 5 and 8. But previously, he'd had six children to six wives. And now, he has 11 more children. No mentions of wives in 2 Samuel, but as I said, in 1 Chronicles we are. The Bathsheba has four children. Shammua means to hear. Shubab means to return. Nathan means to give. So you think about Jonathan. Jonathan means God has given. Solomon means peace or to be complete. The other children, to examine. The God is spacious. The sprout, the shoot. To grow, God hears, God knows, God escapes. But here again we see one of his weaknesses, yet again. His weakness that flows throughout this whole time, that we often think of David's weakness only in chapter 11. But what did the warning in Deuteronomy 17:17 say? That you acquire many wives for yourself, then his heart will turn away. And that's what we see happening, that it's not just in a moment, but often, as we looked at before, when the six children came to the six wives, it's through those six children that you see the problems arise later on in 2 Samuel with Absalom and his other children, all coming from this moment, which also, I think, makes chapter 7 even more important. When he talks about the son sitting on his throne forever, which son is it? It's a good question to ask. But I don't know how he did it. You just think about all the birthdays, the anniversaries. Our jar after Sunday school would be very full, wouldn't it? But here, David's house has been established, but also we see the blessing. Now, it's hard to be able to say what it is to do searches sometimes biblically. Now, there's times where you can just search a word. How often is this word said? So you can search that word and you can find quite easily. It's not always perfect, but it gives you a good idea. Sometimes you can have an idea of words, this word group. You can search and you can find certain phrases. And you can see how often it is referenced, names and things like this. But it's hard then to be able to search maybe emotions. How does the Bible speak about marriage, or how does the Bible speak about children? Now, what we see here is the children are being born to David. But I don't necessarily think that it ever, this is just going from memory. I can't think of a time where children are seen as a burden. Now, sometimes children might cause a burden upon a parent because they're wayward. You think of Esau taking many wives, and this caused grief for Isaac and Rebekah. You can think about maybe David and Absalom. Psalm 3 is a great example of this, that Absalom is chasing down David. But at no point does he regret that he ever had a child. He mourns that his child is wayward, his child is lost. But never do we see that a child is a burden. And I think here in this passage, what we see here, that the more wives is a warning, but the more children is a blessing. That his quiver is indeed growing, that his house is indeed growing. And then we see in verses 17 to 25, David's enemies. When the Philistines heard that David had been anointed king over Israel, all the Philistines went up to search for David. But David heard of it and went down to the stronghold. So here we see the rise of David as king. But then we also see his national platform. On one side you have Hiram giving cedar and gifts to David. And on the other you see the Philistines rising up. The Philistines rising up to be able to find David and attack him. They'd heard that he'd been anointed king. And the Philistines went up to search for David. But David heard of it and went down to the stronghold. That here, you got to remember this relationship between David and the Philistines. Remember, what was David's big entrance onto the stage of the world? It was in chapter 17 where he killed Goliath, the Philistines' celebrity gladiator. You remember what happened then in chapter 18 when the women started to sing the famous pop hit of the turn of the century BC. And they started singing that Saul has struck down his thousands and David his 10,000s. Most often at this time, the Philistines are one of the strongest enemies that are mentioned throughout 1 and 2 Samuel. In Judges, they play a large part. You might say the Amalekites are somewhat in there. But mainly, the Philistines are what it is. So most likely, when they sing, Saul had killed their thousands, and David their 10,000s, they're Philistines. And now you see, the champion who struck down your champion is now king over Israel. Not only had killed the thousands, remember the bridal price that he paid for Michal, 200 foreskins from the Philistines. David had gone to Gath twice, one pretending to be mad, another where he took up residence. He lived in Ziklag. He was a bodyguard to Achish, one of the lords of the Philistines. And somewhat they were on his side, but now he's then gone and joined what it looks like on the outside, and now he's king over Israel. These two enemies that are fighting. You got about 40 years with Saul, underneath Saul's reign, 7 years when he's at Hebron. We've got battles that are recorded throughout there, but now you've got a new king on the block. And one thing that you might want to do is you have a new king. You don't want him to get too strong. You want to be able to show him in his place. You might not be able to defeat him, but you might be able to limit his scope. You find out he's become king. What you would do is go attack him. Put him in his place. Take him while he hasn't really grown a kingdom. He's just moved into this new stronghold in Zion. But the Philistines also, at the end of 1 Samuel, won the battle. Israel was put in their place. And 7 years later, now you have David who's on the scene. David who's king. You don't want him to be able to grow a strong army. You need to be able to show him who's boss. Philistines won against Saul, Ishbosheth up at Mahanaim. But Abner told the elders of Israel earlier in chapter 3, "For some time past you have been seeking David as king over you. Then bring it about. For the Lord has promised David, by the hand of my servant David, I will save my people Israel from the hand of the Philistines, from the hand of all their enemies." Philistines at this point had been the enemies of Israel right through the end of Judges, through this period. Think of Eli, who was beaten by the Philistines in chapters 4 and 5. Think of Samuel, who then bet the Philistines in chapter 7, this glorious moment, one of the highest points in Israel's history, where they turned away from all their foreign gods and truly worshipped the one true God. Saul in chapters 13 and 14, where Jonathan went and took the garrison of the Philistines. Chapter 17, the defeat of Goliath. Now the question is, how will David fare when he's up against the Philistines? Will he be able to defeat them? And we see this here in chapter 5 in a two-part battle. First part is in verses 18 to 21. When the Philistines heard that David had been anointed king over Israel, and all the Philistines went up to search for David, but David heard of it and went down to the stronghold. Now the Philistines had come and spread out in the valley of Rephaim, and David inquired of the Lord, "Shall I go up against the Philistines? Will you give them into my hand?" And the Lord said to David, "Go up, for I will surely give the Philistines into your hand." And David came to Baal Perazim, and David defeated them there. And he said, "The Lord has broken through my enemies before me like a breaking flood." Therefore, the name of the place is called Baal Perazim. And the Philistines left their idols there, and David and his men carried them away. So here you have probably a difficult map to be able to see. But here, Jerusalem is somewhat in the middle there on the right-hand side. And they come down to be able to meet them at Baal Perazim. And he inquires, "Shall I go up?" And again, we see one of these glorious moments where David comes underneath and inquires of the Lord. We see this time and time again through David's reign. There's often this heightening of it, that he goes and inquires of the Lord. And often that's what is lacking in a lot of the Bible verses where we see them turn the wrong way. They don't even go and inquire of the Lord, where they don't wait for the Lord to be able to answer, as Saul did not wait. But he goes here, and as we saw in verse 10, that David became greater and greater. And why was he greater and greater? Again, it wasn't because of the men that surrounded him. It wasn't because of the place of Jerusalem, which is this stronghold. It wasn't because of his army or his horses or his chariots. It was because, for the Lord, the God of hosts, was with him. And here we see that principle carried out in this time, that it means the Lord has broken through. That, as David says, David defeated them in verse 20. And David says, look, he doesn't say, look at how good I am, or look at how strong my army is. Why did I defeat them? He says, the Lord has broken through my enemies before me like a breaking flood. And this is what he says. But we do see here an interesting comment in verse 21. Verse 21 says that they left their idols there, and David and his men carried them away. Here we see, what do they do with the idols? That's a question. We don't get to know what they do. Maybe this might help us understand chapter 6 of the creeping in of pagan practices, as we'll see with the ark and Uzzah. But ultimately, we just have this comment that they left their idols there. They didn't go and destroy them, but here they carried them away. But then the second part of the battle comes up. The second part of the battle in verses 22 to 25. The Philistines came up yet again and spread out in the valley of Rephaim. And when David inquired of the Lord, he said, "You shall not go up, go around to their rear and come against them opposite the balsam trees. And when you hear the sound of marching in the tops of the balsam trees, then arouse yourself. For then the Lord has gone out before you to strike down the army of the Philistines." And the Lord did as the Lord commanded, and David did as the Lord commanded him. And he struck down the Philistines from Geba to Gezer. So here we have this second part of the battle. Not only did he defeat them, the Lord broke through like the breaking of a flood. But here we see a different tactic. He inquires yet again of the Lord what he is to do. That they come up again out of the valley, and he goes to the Lord. He doesn't assume what he has done in the past is what the Lord wants him to do again. We saw this problem in chapter 4 of 1 Samuel when Eli's sons, the Philistines, were winning, and then they just automatically assumed, we should take the ark. This is the tactic that we've used before. We're going to take the ark into battle. It worked before, it'll work again. What they're just doing is they're not listening to what God has said. They've assumed what God has said and how he has worked in the past. The Lord works in mysterious ways. We don't always know. And here David inquires yet again of the Lord, "Shall I go up and defeat them?" And the Lord answers him, "No, you should do it a different way. You should go around the back, go against the rear of the balsam trees, and then arouse yourself." But the important thing again is we see that the defeat is not because of this particular tactic. Why do they win? It says here, "For the Lord Then the Lord has gone before you to strike down the army of the Philistines. That one of the major things that Israel wanted in chapter 7 and 8 is they wanted a king like all the other nations to be able to go and fight their battles for you. And when we looked at this and when we looked at the warning in chapter 12, we saw that what they were actually saying is God is not fighting our battles for us. But here, again, we see this principle again. It's the God is gone before them. Why did they win the second time? First, the Lord broke through. The second time is God has gone before them. And you see this great principle. Why is David, throughout all this chapter, you see David's house been built, him been anointed as king. How did David become greater and greater? The Lord was with him. How did David become king? David says in chapter 12, the Lord, he knew that the Lord had made him king. The Lord had established him as king. That he has exalted his kingdom for the sake of his people. The Lord is working. It's the Lord who breaks through. It's the Lord who conquers the Philistines the first time. It's the Lord who goes before them the second time. And I think this is one of these great foundational passages that we see throughout all of this. We often exalt the saints of the Old Testament. We often say, well, we just need to be more like Abraham. We just need to be more like David. And often when we exalt the saints, what we do is we put them, like Catholics do, up on a pedestal and saying, if we could just be more David-like. But the thing about David is David was not a good example. Why was he king? The Lord had made him king. Why was he great? The Lord had made him great. The Lord was with him. Why did he defeat all these armies and build his kingdom? Because the Lord was the one who broke through. The Lord who was the one who went before him. If we exalt the person, what we do is we minimize the works of God. We downplay them and place them just merely. And we don't see God's supernatural hand at work. And this is why it's important, because David gets a house. And in chapter 6, we see David's folly come up again. But yet God continues to work. In chapter 7, David says, I want to build God a house. And God says, no, I'm going to build your house. I'm going to establish your throne. And your son is going to sit on your throne forever. That it's God's hand at work through the valleys and the caves, the wildernesses that he wandered. But even when his height, when he's defeating the enemies, it's not David's doing, it's the Lord's doing. I think this is why this is an important section that we need to be reminded of.
Thank you for listening to this sermon from Seven Springs Presbyterian Church. If you want to learn more about us, please find us on Facebook. Or visit us at SevenSpringsPresbyterian.com. Seven Springs Presbyterian Church began in 1874 and is a congregation of the Presbyterian Church in America located in Glade Spring, Virginia. Please join us for worship on Sunday at 10 a.m. and 6 p.m. for His glory and His gospel.